The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading excerpts of funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. My dear listeners, it's that time again in America. Well, yes, it's also voting season. No, wait. Today's show is not actually about voting or politics. We won't tell you who to vote for or not vote for. We will only ask that you do vote. But it's that other time of year. Costumes, decorations, parties, and of course, sweets. The holiday season, which unofficially starts off with Halloween. This month is sweetly dedicated to sweets. Candy, candy, candy. Whether you love it, or hate that you love it, candy is bound to come up in conversation during this time of year, especially if you are around kids at any point during the season. And why is that? Well, Jim Gaffigan gives us plenty of reasons why, with all things holidays, sweets, and desserts. To start off our season of sweets, our first story is from his book, Dad is Fat, published in 2013, the chapter, Tis the Season. Kids love holidays. As a kid, I used to measure the year by which holiday was coming up. The most important time of the year was the holiday season, the period between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day. It encompassed so many holidays. That time period is clearly a season of holidays, a holiday season. No matter what faith you belong to or what tradition you follow, everyone is partying. You're shopping, you're cooking, you're getting together with family. You're eating food that's bad for you. You're eating more food that's bad for you. And, of course, you're eating food that's bad for you. Holidays are also an opportunity for kids to unlearn every good habit they've learned during the rest of the year. They don't go to school. They get to stay up past their bedtime. They get candy and presents for doing nothing. Childhood utopia. The holiday season was always the longest one, so it was obviously my favorite. Now, what's happened since I was a kid is that all holidays have become holiday seasons. If you don't believe me, go into any drugstore. The day after New Year's Day, the Valentine's Day aisle appears. The day after Valentine's Day, the same aisle is filled with shamrocks and leprechauns. Halloween is no longer one night. It's a week, if you're lucky. A month, if you live in New York City. I don't know how this happened or what the logic was. Well, Halloween lands on a Tuesday, so let's have the kids dress up every day for a month. There are even Halloween greeting cards now. As a result of this extended Halloween season, kids end up having more than one Halloween costume. Like they are competing in a beauty pageant. What costume do you want to wear to school? Then, what costume do you want to wear to the parade? Then, what costume do you want to wear to trick or treat? Then, what costume do you want to wear to the swimsuit competition? When I was growing up, I barely had a Halloween costume. I mostly remember cutting a couple of holes in a sheet for eyes and going as a ghost. Wait, maybe that was just in that Charlie Brown's Halloween special. I just remember going as either a ghost or a bum. Not a homeless person, but a bum. It was a less sensitive era. Now there is mandatory parental participation in holidays when you have young children. Of course, you want to share the experience with them, but no matter how jaded you might be, you just dare not ruin it for them. The tradition of chopping down a pine tree and putting it in your living room may seem like the behavior of a drunk guy, but you do it sober. You carve pumpkins, paint eggs, anything for your kids. Somehow, a couple of years ago, I even became one of those dads who dresses up with his kids at Halloween. I can't believe it either. Yes, it was Jeannie's idea, and I've done it more than once. I just wish I had known before how similar Captain Hook looks to Captain Morgan when you run into drunk people who really like rum on Halloween. Even though my kids still measure the year by holidays, there is barely any downtime between them. Add in birthday parties, and the fun never stops. If the holidays used to be a time that kids unlearned their good habits, now the 5 minutes between holidays are the only time for them to unlearn their bad habits. This holiday conspiracy created by the evil drugstore corporate giants is threatening to create an entire generation of spoiled monsters. Just another hurdle for parents who don't want a house full of these holiday-possessed demons, but also don't want to be the only parents who threaten to cancel Christmas every time their kids misbehave. You become caught on the horns of a dilemma. When your treat bag generation kids are getting treats constantly, you lose the specialness of treating them yourselves. Now, truly the only way to really treat your kids as a reward for good behavior is to not treat them to treats. And then you know you were treating them well. I think my head just exploded. And now we move into more about sweets and a breakdown of different types of sweets. Another chapter from the book, Dad is Fat, How Sweet It Is. I'm assuming everyone reading this was a kid at one time. Well, most of you were. I don't have to tell you how important candy is to children. Candy is the currency of children. Kids collect it, trade it, and hoard it. It's how parents bribe their kids. It's how annoying kids get friends. I'm sure I wasn't the only kid thinking, I really don't like that neighbor boy, but he always has candy, so it looks like we are going to hang out a lot. As a kid, it was baffling to contemplate the adult blasé attitude toward candy. I remember thinking, when I'm an adult and have a job, I'm going to spend all my money on candy. Of course, as you get older, your taste buds change. You start getting acne, and eventually you decide you don't want to be a fat tub of turds. You realize that you have to set boundaries with candy. By that, I mean you decide to never buy candy or willfully be around it. As an adult, I always wondered who was buying the candy that seemed to be sold everywhere. I never even understood why they even had candy on display in front of the cash register at drugstores. Who is that for? Yeah, while you're ringing up my diabetes medication, throw in this Snickers. They put that candy right at child's eye level, so the parent will be fumbling with their wallet at checkout, and their kids beg them for the candy, and they give in out of frustration. Not me. I am not falling for that evil marketing scheme like those other suckers. I would never purchase candy, and obviously, I would never give candy to my children. Yet, for some reason, now that I have kids, I eat candy all the time. I've never bought the candy, but it is constantly ending up at my house. It's my children's candy that we have confiscated for safekeeping. Suddenly, I have this big bowl of temptation in my cupboard, beckoning me to eat it. It doesn't have to be good candy. I've eaten an entire bag of stale gummy bears on more than one occasion in the past month. I don't think of it as stealing. Hey, it's my home, and those kids don't pay rent. Most of the time, I don't even want to eat their candy. But late at night, I'm confronted with the predicament. Eat my kids' candy or feel my feelings. Eating the candy always seems to win. Now, there are parents who would not raid their children's stash, and they are called weirdos or anorexic. What would you do if you had a bag of mini chocolate bars in your house? Let your kids eat it? Throw it away? I'm pretty sure throwing away candy is a crime in some states. Let's be serious. You would eat the candy. You would eat the candy to save your children's lives. It's a heroic action, actually. By the way, I'm not eating all of my children's candy. When I pilfer their Halloween bags every year, I take only the Snickers, Reese's, and Heath bars. I thoughtfully leave them the Now and Laters, wax lips, and the wrappers. I'm not a criminal. Future generations will look back on our propensity to give candy to children as something preposterous, like giving cigarettes to babies. Sometimes it feels like candy is being forced on parents. My son's preschool had an annual fundraiser that involved selling a case of chocolate bars. Really? Chocolate bars? Part of why we are sending our kids to preschool is so they wouldn't be at home begging for candy. This always felt comparable to raising money to fight heart disease by selling steaks. A 3-year-old is not going to go around selling chocolate bars. I am not certainly going to go around selling chocolate bars. The solution? Write a check, and Dad eats a case of chocolate bars. Don't worry, my kids barely notice any of their candy is gone. Recently, my 8-year-old Mari asked, "What happened to my Valentine's Day candy?" Like a good parent, I lied. "I don't know." Not missing a beat, she responded, "Oh, well, I'll just have some of my Easter candy." There's always another birthday party, another holiday. Birthdays and holidays are just drug mules smuggling candy to our children, and we are the corrupt DEA agents fighting the losing war on candy. For today's kids, it's an abundant candy universe. They don't even have to try for it. They are of the treat bag generation. Sure, my children will still beg us for it, but that is because they know we have it. When I was a kid, we never had candy in our house. It was a reserved fantasy that came true on Halloween. You would binge on it one night a year after trick-or-treating, have a horrible stomach ache the next day, and spend the rest of the year dreaming about candy. I remember watching a Rolo commercial as a kid and longingly thinking, one day. Before I wrap this essay up and eat some of my kids' candy, I do need to address two candies in particular. One is evil, and one is a lifesaver. And no, I'm not talking about lifesavers. Gum. Probably the most destructive candy is chewing gum. Ever give a 3-year-old a piece of gum? It always seems like a good idea. It will keep them occupied. It's not candy, so they won't be ingesting handfuls of it. And all little kids absolutely love gum. If they know you have a pack of gum, you suddenly have absolute power. You can lord it over them. If you behave in the supermarket, I will give you a piece of gum. Kids will do anything for a piece of gum. Of course, you think that the worst thing that can happen is that they will swallow the gum. Don't swallow the gum. It takes 7 years to digest. In reality, you should encourage them to swallow the gum because the worst thing that can happen is them losing the gum. A piece of chewed gum will wreak havoc on everything in sight and end up in places that will shock you. Kids cannot keep gum in their mouth. Half of the fun of gum to a 3-year-old is stretching it out, rolling it in a ball like chewable Play-Doh, and eventually losing it somewhere. You will discover that that piece of gum somehow has fused itself to the butt of your pants and become intermingled with the fabric of your jeans forever. Give a kid gum, and the bad karma is instantaneous. that gum is guaranteed to somehow find its way into the clothes dryer and ruin all the school uniforms at once. The other day, I submitted to the begging of my 3-year-old Katie and gave her a piece of gum that, 5 seconds later, was firmly embedded in her hair. She had to get that emergency haircut with that isolated spike that screams, "I was playing with scissors," or "My idiot dad gave me gum." I don't want to get all political, but I am definitely pro-gum control. Lollipops. My kids love lollipops, but not as much as I love lollipops. My love of lollipops is not about eating them. It's about how quiet they make my children. It is virtually impossible for a 3-year-old to whine and complain with a lollipop in her mouth. "Why? I don't want to sit in the back." Suck, suck. "This one is cherry." If you ever take your kids to a situation where they must be quiet, bring lollipops. They're like flavored muzzles. Mothers-to-be should be given bouquets of lollipops at baby showers. At the hospital, people should hand lollipops to new fathers and say, "Here, you're going to need this." It's the parent's secret weapon. What about the sugar? Well, Dr. John makes sugar-free lollipops. No, he did not pay me to write that. He does not even know who I am. I don't even know if Dr. John is a real doctor or if he even exists. I have to assume lollipop Dr. John is different from the musician Dr. John who sang that song, "Right Place, Wrong Time." By coincidence, that song could be used to describe any parent with a kid who needs a lollipop. Dr. John is most likely not the musician and just the Mama Celeste of lollipops. Of course, if you do exist, Dr. John, I think you should send me a case of sugar-free lollipops as a reward for mentioning you. There is no sugar in Dr. John's lollipops. They are sweetened with a natural sweetener that we will likely find out in 10 years is 100 times worse for you than sugar. The sugar predicament is strange. It's always like, "Sugar's bad. Sugar will rot your teeth and make you fat. Use these yellow packets instead." Then, like 6 months later, "Don't use those yellow packets. They cause cancer. They even cause worse cancer than those pink packets of fake sugar we told you caused cancer 6 months ago." You are always forced to face the dilemma, do I eat the sugar that will make me fat, or do I use this other stuff that will kill me? What's a little cancer? Cancer makes you lose weight, right? What was I talking about? Oh, yes, lollipops. Why did you change the subject and start talking about that other thing that no one wants to say out loud? After all, this is a book about kids and being a good-looking dad. But of course, sweets are not limited to candy. Jim has more to say on the subject of desserts. Once a super extra special treat, nowadays more likely to be the rule than the exception. From his book, Food, A Love Story, published in 2014, the chapters Just Desserts, Ice Cream Forever Young, and Let Them Eat Cake. Dessert is special, and as a result, it is treated differently. In some restaurants, desserts get their own menu. In diners and truck stops, desserts are sometimes put in a rotating glass case like they are an artifact or some of Queen Elizabeth's jewelry. I'm not sure what the intended response is supposed to be. "I didn't want dessert before, but now that I see that pudding at that angle, I gotta get me some." When I was growing up, my family had dessert only on special occasions, like birthdays or holidays. My children live in a different world. Dessert is not a luxury, it's a right. If my 4-year-old Katie doesn't ask about dessert 4 times in an evening, I assume she is sick, or there is going to be a tornado. Dessert is special for everyone. That's why it's saved until last. If that exclusive spot after the meal were not reserved for dessert, what would stop anyone from just ordering dessert instead of the meal? It is my belief that all desserts are just a form of either ice cream or cake. Just about everyone has a fond memory of eating ice cream as a child. It is rare to find a child looking disappointed while eating ice cream. As much as eating ice cream can make a child look happy, indulging in the exact same ice cream eating behavior makes an adult look pathetic. This is because ice cream is for children. Everyone likes ice cream, but it's really for kids. Ice cream trucks, ice cream cones, and the sprinkles that go on the ice cream are for children. Kids get ice cream, adults get alcohol. It's only fair. Unfortunately, just like kickball, silly birthday parties, Disney, and diapers, ice cream has been co-opted by adults. Admittedly, I am an adult, and I eat ice cream, but I'm not proud of it. I'm not going to walk around in broad daylight eating ice cream like some kind of fat, good-looking loser. Some things are better kept behind closed doors in the privacy of your own home. Every adult should know that the appropriate place to eat ice cream is on the couch in front of the TV watching TLC. Mouthful of ice cream. See, those hoarders, they're the ones with the problem. The way we adults rationalize eating ice cream is rather pitiful. It's hot outside. Let's get some ice cream. My boyfriend broke up with me. I'm going to have some ice cream. My name is Jim Gaffigan. I'm going to eat some ice cream. It's always bittersweet when there's no ice cream in our home, mostly because that means I just ate a pint of ice cream. I'll try to blame it on one of the babies, but I find it hard to explain the ice cream stains on my shirt. I mostly eat ice cream at night in sweatpants, the uniform of ice cream eating. I'll toss the lid even before I start eating the pint, because I'm not a quitter. Occasionally, Jeannie will inquire, "Are you going to eat the entire pint of ice cream by yourself?" I answer, "Hopefully, unless you selfishly want a bite." There was a time back in the 80s when adults remembered that ice cream was for children. Frozen yogurt was presented as a healthier, adult version of ice cream. There was even non-fat frozen yogurt that meant you could eat delicious frozen yogurt without the fat. I don't know why I find Froyo so annoying. Some friends in college would replace lunch with non-fat frozen yogurt. "We are going out for Froyo!" They would announce it like they were about to eat a salad or go jogging. I couldn't express my joy enough when it was revealed that non-fat Froyo, while it had no fat, had all the calories of regular ice cream because it was loaded with sugar. People again had to face the fact that eating ice cream really was for children. So the grown-up ice cream eater went back into hiding. Suddenly in the 90s, an ice cream company from Vermont named Ben and Jerry's burst onto the national scene and made it not only possible, but also cool for adults to come out of the closet as ice cream eaters. The Ben and Jerry's feel-good social agenda helped soften the reality of eating ice cream for adults. I can eat ice cream with candy and help the environment. I'm eating this pint for the earth. My dream job would be to be the guy who comes up with those Ben and Jerry's recipes. Now that's a great job. How could anyone complain about that job? I imagine that guy or gal just comes into work early in the afternoon. What do I feel like binging on today? Let's see. Reese's, Snickers, vanilla ice cream, and a caramel swirl. Let's call it, Fat Daddy. Well, see you guys tomorrow. I'm going to take a nap. People tend to behave differently around different food. For example, being around vegetables can make people lose their appetites, and the close proximity of cake turns people into neurotic messes. Cake has such a magnetic effect. It is difficult to pretend you are not mesmerized by its captivating presence. Everyone wants to devour the cake as soon as they see it, or at least dip a finger in the frosting. But you have to exercise restraint around your peers, lest they discover that you truly have no impulse control. To cover up your greediness, you have to act bashfully ignorant of the existence of cake. "What is this called? Cake? Well, I guess I'll try it. I've never tried cake before." We can't simply enjoy cake. People eat cake like they are committing adultery. "Don't tell my husband I'm doing this." This strange behavior is driven by the fact that cake is a true symbol of gluttony. If you eat a whole pizza, your friends might respond, "Wow, you were hungry." But if you eat a whole cake, friends will say, "You have a problem." Eating cake is not like drinking alcohol. You never hear someone brag, "Yeah, last night I had 4 pieces of cake." Cake is a social food. It must be eaten with someone else or in a group. There is something profoundly sad about eating cake while you are alone. Believe me, I do it all the time. The bonus of cake is that it's not just cake. It's usually cake with frosting on top. Frosting is a fancy name for sugar mixed with grease. I'll never forget the time I found a tub of frosting in a cabinet when I was 10. I remember thinking, "Wow, it would be really pathetic to eat this, but here goes." Given that we all know cake is bad for us, we often try to hide the fact that we are eating it. We have masterfully created socially acceptable ways to disguise cake so we can eat it whenever we want. "It's breakfast and I obviously can't eat cake. I'll have a muffin." You know the difference between a muffin and a cupcake? Nothing. A muffin is just a bald cupcake and we all know it. We all know we are not supposed to have cake for breakfast unless it's a pancake. I'm not sure how that one slid through. "Young man, you're not having cake for breakfast. You're having fried cake with syrup for breakfast. Now load up on that and try not to nap. Pancakes definitely make you lower your expectations for the day. "Well, looks like I'm not showering today. I'll be digesting those carb cakes for the next 8 hours. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any amusing quotes or anecdotes you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number, one more time, is 919-832-5138. Thank you so much for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.